because I'm not sure that a lot of people would be. I shouldn't have said quantum Shannon theory versus entanglement. I guess what I'm interested in is kind of relating the two fields in some sense. Although, of course, I mean, entanglement is a kind of information theory. But I guess I was interested in relating quantum Shannon theory, which is like a communication theory, quantum communication theory, with entanglement, in part because, I just like both things, and in part because in quantum Shannon theory, we're starting to get a really nice understanding of a lot of the basic building blocks in information theory. And I guess I was hoping that it might help understand some of the aspects of entanglement theory, things like additivity issues and that sort of thing. But more, it was just there was kind of some natural problems, and I found that quite quickly it seemed to make sense and kind of fit quite well together. And I was a bit surprised by that. So I'll start with some of the vague statements. I guess I can also call this talk like an operational interpretation of squashed entanglement, which is kind of the more central result, but not the only aspect. It's more trying to introduce a paradigm that kind of connects communication theory with entanglement. So the vague statement is the following. Imagine that Bob and Alice are here, and they share some state, and we want to somehow quantify the amount of, say, correlation or entanglement in that state. And there's kind of a way that what I'm going to say is strictly speaking incorrect, but there's kind of an intuition that the amount of correlation between Alice and Bob somehow relates to the following problem, that I imagine that I have Charlie over here, and I ask that Alice send her state to Charlie. And there's lots of ways she might, resources she might use to send it. She might use classical communication, she might not. But let's just for the moment take just straight out sending, that she can just send qubits, that's all she's allowed to do. And there's a sense in which the more correlated she is with Bob, the more stuff she's going to have to send. Because you can think of the sending as that essentially, you have a state shared between Alice and Bob, and now you want it shared between Charlie and Bob. And so what you're having to send are basically the correlations between these two people. Okay? So there's a very vague sense in which one might expect that this notion of sending, which is a kind of a quantum Shannon theory, quantum information theory, the sending might tell us something about the correlations contained in the state. Right.
Yes. Wouldn't she still have, I mean, wouldn't it still take resources for her to send Psi over to Charlie?
Okay, I'll explain why that's not the case, why she wouldn't take resources. A quick way of saying that is that if we, just like all of communication theory and all of entanglement theory, we assume that the state is known. So if Alice, say, has a product state, like just a pure state, let's just take it a pure state for the moment, because we'll get a bit more. Let me say that Alice has a pure state, then Charlie can just recreate it because he knows what it is. So it doesn't require any qubits for Alice to send it to Charlie. Okay.
The state of Charlie and Bob is always product state.
Sorry?
It's always a product state between Bob and Charlie.
No, let me get more precise before, I should probably, I know I said I made a big statement, but I'll maybe get a bit more precise and then it'll, I just want to give a vague intuition, but no, it's not always a product state. I assume any state between Alice and Bob. And I'm interested in quantifying the correlations between Alice and Bob.
Do Bob and Charlie initially have any correlations?
Yeah.
I'll get to that. So we need to be a bit more precise, and we need to be a bit more precise about what we mean to send a state, as Robin, I think, was somehow getting at. And the standard way that one needs to really consider these sorts of questions is to introduce a purification of rho AB. So we imagine that we have some reference system R, and we purify this state. Okay? We purify the state. So it's a total pure state, psi, and we're always going to go to many copies, because that is what kind of makes things nice in information theory. It gives us unique answers. We consider always the purification. So we have Alice, Bob, and some reference system. Okay? And in any information processing task, when we want to send something, we need to have a way of knowing that we succeeded. And the way that you can tell that you succeeded is that the total pure state should be roughly the same afterwards. Okay? So what it means to succeed is that after your whole set of protocols, that what you're left with is basically something that looks very close to the original state. Maybe it's held between different parties, so I'll put an X here because it may have changed hands. The people that hold the state might be different now. But that essentially it's the same. Okay? I might get some additional resources as well, but that we essentially want that this thing should be kept. The total pure state should be kept during any protocol. Another way of saying that is what you're really sending is entanglement in some sense.
I mean, CB?
It could be anything. I just want to generically say what it would be in any kind of. This is the way to think about, say, Schumacher compression. It's a great thing about Schumacher compression. It's a good way to think about any transfer of states. It's equivalent to saying that your protocol should succeed for any pure state realization dependency matrix. It's completely equivalent. Usually, that's, I think, how a lot of people think, but it's when you actually do calculations and when you're thinking about it, I think it's much more elegant to think of something like this.
Some way to the task of communicating classical information?
Yes. When people argue that, what do you mean by information? And I would argue that all information is mutual information. So that if I want to send it, if in a classical communication, if Alice has to send a message to Bob, you might want to consider that the message is correlated with some referee who will then check to see that that message really did get there. And so what it means to check that the really did get there was that the referee, checks that the mutual information is the same as was sent.
I mean, couldn't I have a classical information transferring protocol where that got decohered in some basis and that wouldn't hurt me? Or I'm asking about the statement that you want your state to be the same.
Oh, well, I mean, I could imagine some protocol where I don't care about preserving that. But, then it becomes more like a classical task or something. I mean, when in all of quantum information theory and quantum communication theory, we're interested in preserving the quantum state. That's the sacred piece of it.
So if I understand this correctly, you want to end up with C holding state that's not only like A's marginal at the beginning, but preserves the correlations as well. So it's like you want to preserve the entanglement fidelity.
Exactly.
As well as the local marginal state.
Exactly, yeah. Because if we didn't demand that, then it would be really simple. If all we cared about was preserving the marginal state, Alice just throws it away and Bob just makes it.
Yeah.
That would be really easy, right? That's not what we mean by saying a quantum state.
Obviously.
So let me say what the result is, the main result at least. The result is that if we allow Alice and Charlie to have any ancillas they want, whatever they ask for, we give them. Quantum states, any kind of side information, anything they want. We give anything they want to them, then ask them to send Alice to send her state. And the rate at which she can send it, meaning the amount of qubits she has to send for each copy of the state, is equal to the squashed entanglement. Okay? That's the operational meaning of the squashed entanglement. So I'll say that a bit more precisely.
Are you going to define the squashed entanglement?
Yeah, I'll do that.
As something other than the famous.
Otherwise, it's explaining blue jumps in terms of snarks.
Right. I will.
I realize my half-hearted attempt to motivate the research, I was going to do a whole thing on those sorts of things, and I just kind of forgot about it. So I'll motivate it more at the end. But I'll say what this question is. But let me say what the general kind of paradigm is. I want to give these guys whatever they want. And one way of doing that is basically to just say, well, okay, let me first say why I want to give them whatever they want.
Does anything they want include EPLs?
Sure.
Right.
Whatever they want. Let me say why I want to give.
Whatever, and there's entangled whatever.
Sorry.
Well, there's local electricity,
right.
Whatever, and there's entangled whatever.
Sure, I'm even allowing even more whatever. I'm allowing whatever being things that are correlated with the state. And there's a reason why I do that. It's because we want to kind of get a sense of the correlations in the state, and that's this line here, right? That's this line here, the correlations which Alice shares with Bob. We don't care about the correlations that Alice has with this other party, this referee. So we want to get rid of it. How do we get rid of it? We basically want to kind of give it to them so that it's not counting, it's helping them rather than hindering them. So what we can do is we can essentially take R and just imagine that we divide it up and we give part of it to Alice and part of it to Charlie. So we basically give part of it to Alice, I'll call it Alice prime because it's an insula, and I'll give part of it to Charlie. Okay. And the idea is that when we do this, we'll basically get the squash entanglement and the kind of some essentially what it's doing is it's basically making these correlations don't somehow matter at all. They don't affect the rate. Okay? And let me define the squash entanglement. Squash entanglement is basically 1/2 mutual information AB conditioned. It's the infimum over extensions 1/2. And the extension is just any state which essentially fits with the margin. So it's any state, so an extension is basically any state such that rho A, B, B trace of B.
So two coefficients. One is we've already purified AB using R. Are we now forgetting about that purification and imagining a new purification involving E?
No. Someone you asked me what the definition of squash entanglement is. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Right. Okay. All right. Second question. Can you motivate? You said R. We're going to divide up R into A prime and C, and we're going to give some to Charlie and some back to Alice.
Right.
Why wouldn't I just give it all to Charlie? Why wouldn't that be the optimal thing to do?
Okay, I mean, that's a question. I'm not saying it's not the optimal thing to do. But maybe. I'm just saying we basically, they ask for whatever they want, we give it to them, and they do the best they can. And that I'm interested in that sort of a thing.
Okay.
I mean, there's a more general question you can ask, actually, which is that, and it's basically about, so you can think of this, we often call, in Shannon theory, we call the ancillas that you add, that they get, especially when it's correlated with the state, you call it side information. So it's like a hint. Think of it like a hint. We call that side information. Okay, we're giving them side information. So more generally, I'm actually not just interested in this problem, I'm interested in a paradigm that one can use to understand all kinds of correlations. You can have a more general paradigm where you ask the following question. We look at some set of states, so some kind of side information, which we can think of as just a kind of state A prime C, which is an element of some set, okay? Some set S. We have some kind of side information. And then we can just ask, given that side information, what is the best rate? The best rate for Alice to send to Charlie, given the restriction on the set S. And I'm going to call that Q upper bar. Okay? Yeah. Right. But I might want to, what I'm actually going to be doing is considering sets where I just put a restriction on the reduction. I allow anything else, so it can be correlated in any way you want, but the kind of state it is restricted.
So the marginal on A times C is restricted.
Right. So the set S basically just restricts this side information. And so just to state what the results, some of the results are, if there's no restriction, so the set S is anything, so if S equals all states, then the best rate is equal to the squash entanglement, and so it's a correlation measure. Okay. If the set S is equal to maximally correlated states, and I'll say what that is, maximally correlated states, so they're usually called MCS, maximally correlated states, then it turns out that the best rate is equal to the entanglement cost or the entanglement formation. And a maximally correlated state is just any state rho which is equal to rho MCS equals sum over. So a singlet is an example of a maximally correlated state. Classically correlated states are examples of maximally correlated states. A bit of like this.
So it's the entanglement information of what? Of the state rho AB?
AB, yeah.
Okay.
Right. So Q is a function of the state rho AB.
Excuse me. What do you mean that these EC or EF?
Well, so it depends on what your rules are. So actually, part of the motivation for this is I was interested in additivity questions. And so if I'm allowed to make, it turns out if I'm allowed to have maximally correlated states which correlate with the many copies of the state, then it's given by the entanglement cost. If I'm interested in maximally correlated states which have to be correlated individually, then you get the entanglement information. So if I follow my rules that I gave to Debbie, then it would just be EC. But because I'm using additivity questions, I could restrict it to being a single copy side information. And part of the motivation for this is where you can reclassify the additivity questions about as a question about maximally correlated states. So you get one of, now six different recastations, that's a word of the additivity questions. If the set S is restricted to be either null, so nothing on Alice, or null on Charlie, then we no longer have it's no longer a entanglement measure. It now becomes a correlation measure, namely 1/2 the mutual information. So this paradigm is going to help us not only quantify entanglement, but this paradigm will also allow us to examine other kinds of correlations. Okay? If the set S is just completely null, so no side information at all, then it's just S of A. So it's just then it becomes just a pure information measure and nothing about the correlations. So you can see in this paradigm, you kind of are getting the whole spectrum of, not the whole spectrum, but just an interesting kind of array of
informational quantities which relate to the state AB, and all I'm doing is I'm just telling you what the set S is. So I'm just talking about a set of states, and that induces some kind of a correlation or an information or an entanglement measure on the other sets of states.
The third one, the null on A or null on C, gives you 1/2 IAB.
Yeah.
Is that, let's see, so this sort of involves super dense coding, right? This is, it's like entanglement assisted capacity.
Ah, good. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. I should. So when I get to these guys, I also, and even when I can consider them all of them like this, I can give them I allow them some entanglement. Yeah. Well, actually, that's not true. I allow them to get entanglement as well.
Okay. So there could be sort of, in addition to your sigma pair, there could also be a bunch of other EPR pairs that are just shared between S and C.
No, for these cases, you don't need to worry about it because this is already contained in the set of states. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that in these cases, you just don't need it. You actually get it out.
Okay, so maybe a better, more concrete question is, if S has to be null on A or null on C,
right,
then how do I achieve that bound, that 1/2 A colon B, without giving them a bunch of EPR pairs to do super dense coding?
I'm not saying qubits, so that's the amount of qubits I have to send, and that's basically the mother protocol.
Okay.
I'll explain. Is that clear with at least the statement of results? Debbie's got you, but like a puzzle.
Yeah.
Angry.
No, just one thing about the third line, because it didn't quite with what I remembered the mother protocol is doing. Do you mind reviewing that?
Oh yeah, I understand why. So maybe because if I put B equal to R, then would it make sound familiar? So remember that Bob is in this case.
Isn't that correspond to the fact that it's now on both A and C?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll
I think it maybe it's looking confusing to you because usually one talks about 1/2 IAR and Bob is actually Charlie.
Yeah, perhaps. I just forget what they allow between
right.
A and C for the moment.
Well, it's Alice and Bob share some states, so it's a tripartite state. Now, there's something else you can consider, which of course is a malicious distributor, so it's a dual paradigm, so a completely dual paradigm to this, interested in dual quantities, and one can imagine what would be like a malicious distributor of side information who says, I'm going to give you guys the worst possible side information that I can, but they might be forced. You might force them to give certain kinds of side information, but given that kind of side information, they might then try and make the worst kind of side information. In other words, you might say you have to give, for example, in this case, you have to give Alice and Bob all the side information, but you can distribute it in as malicious a way as you possibly want. And then you can say, how well can Alice and Bob do, given that the distributor of side information is
sure. So Alice and Charlie? They're the ones communicating, right?
Good, yes. So it turns out, so you can ask, well, it's malicious, so it's the dual paradigm. Malicious. Is that right? And Q lower bar, so the worst rate of rho AB. Oh, it's actually, it's not the worst rate, it's actually the best rate, but under the circumstances. Of a malicious distributor. This is going to look like a new quantity, and I apologize for the name. I call it the puffed entanglement, as opposed to squashed. This is going to turn out, in this case, is going to turn out to be the entanglement of assistance. Strangely enough, this is going to turn. This is going to turn out to actually the puffed entanglement. Is actually going to be
is going to turn out to be also equal to the entanglement of assistance. Which is kind of strange because it means that a malicious person should just use maximally correlated states. This is self-dual. This is self-dual, but which is not surprising given the thing. And well, this is also self-dual. Okay, so this is some dual paradigm. Oh, it's the defined as the if R performs a measurement, the best measurement possible, it would be the amount of singlets that she could create between Alice and Bob. I think Debbie helped define it, no?
What do you mean by there's a malicious distributor?
So, you mean in this case, eh?
Yeah.
So, the malicious distributor is told that they have to give the state R to Alice and Charlie, mm-hmm. but who you give it to doesn't, you can give it to whoever you want. So you could give, you can distribute it in such a way that you make it very difficult for them to send the state. So for example, it might make it very difficult if you give it all to Alice, because now Charlie has no prior information about the state.
So you restrict the same set of sigma A times C, but you allow an arbitrary bipartite cut.
That's right. Well, I mean, what you're optimizing in this case is you're just saying, how do you distribute it in such a way that it helps your rate as makes your rate as good as possible? And here you're raising the thing, how can you distribute it to make it as difficult to send it as possible?
So the second part, when you have this maximally correlated state, that already implies a cut, isn't it?
Sorry?
I mean, the second category, when you talk about the maximally correlated state there.
Yes.
The way how you write it down, that seems to imply that you already have a cut about system A and A prime and C.
Well,
so how can you then redistribute it later, and is that kind of definition of that cost?
But it depends which, so it's certainly true that how you distributed it, well, I mean, it's true that you have to give the same thing to Alice and Charlie, but of course, you don't need to give them the same state. There's many different ways you can unitarily change the state so that it looks different. In other words, how this is correlated to the initial state, rho AB, can be different. I mean, there are different, so another thing is there are many different more maximally correlated states to choose from, and you don't need to pick the same one. So you might pick a maximally correlated state which is just worse. But it still, of course, has to be a purification, which might be a worse purification. So the way, in other words, the way that it's correlated, so the way that it's correlated to Alice and Charlie is fixed by the set S, but the way that it's correlated to the Alice and Bob might be different.
Perhaps I do not understand completely the malicious case, because it's the best rate that I get with a worse distribution.
Right, so I imagine
it's kind of a mean max, or max mean, I don't know.
I guess so. I mean, I imagine that first the malicious distributor gives the states to Alice and Charlie, and then I allow Alice and Charlie they're the honest parties, they're the good guys, and they just try, and they try their best given what life dealt them.
Anyway, is the maximum over the full set S?
No.
I mean, restricted set S.
Right. So this is I mean, the rates are always, I mean, you always, when you're coding, of course, you can allow them stupid coding, but they're just assumed, you know, they're going to do their best to code, given the side information. So I give it the worst side information, so it's the worst, best rate.
It's something like
the best they can do in the worst scenario.
That's right.
Okay. If I have a state from S, then I'm sure I can do at least that.
Yeah.
It's the optimal protocol for the worst case.
Exactly. They're the good guys. The distributors are bad.
One last thing. So you said, when you said that E puffed is equal to the entanglement of assistance in some cases.
No.
Or it always is?
It always is, which is kind of strange. I don't understand it.
So then the interpretation you put on that was that a good strategy for the malicious distributor is to distribute a maximally correlated state. My question is it under those conditions where the malicious distributor has to give the full purification to the two of them, is it always possible to choose that purification to be a maximally correlated state? It seems as if...
Sorry, under this situation here.
So that's right. And I interpret that as meaning that the malicious distributor has to take the whole purification,
yes,
and split it in half and give half of it to Alice and half of it to Charlie.
Right.
But it's not obvious that it would always be possible to, by doing so, give them a maximally correlated state.
No, it is.
But isn't that maximally correlated state separable?
Why is it separable?
Because it's a convex mixed
singlet is a maximally correlated state.
Oh, never mind. Please continue.
Okay, when should I end this thing? One question, so I've got about 10 minutes.
5:05.
Including questions.
I don't know what's the standard. Why don't you we'll just cut things off at 5. There are people who are asking questions. That's
okay, so we'll cut things off at 5. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There are other things that you can look at, and this was another motivation. I'm kind of interested in the relationship between squashed and entanglement cost, and in order to distinguish these things, so for example, you can ask a question, if the squashed is zero, is the entanglement cost zero? And it may not be. We don't know.
Could you explain what the puffed entanglement is at some point?
I will. It's the soup. I just made it up, so I don't think it's useful.
So there's no difference between the cost there and the entanglement formation?
No, no. In the entanglement cost case, I'm allowing the distributor to essentially choose a maximally correlated state, which is somehow correlated with the entire n copies of row AP. Okay. If I were to further restrict them to just the case, and this is a bit outside the rules that I set to Debbie, but if I restrict the distributor to only do single copy things, then it'll be this. The reason I wanted to go outside the rules is because I'm interested in additivity questions.
Yes.
You can see, you can recast it then as an additivity question about maximally correlated states, but it's kind of interesting because the squashed entanglement, the reason people love squashed entanglement so much is because it's additive.
Right.
So it's kind of funny that when you consider the site information, that it's additive in the one case. But it becomes like potentially non-additive in kind of as a communication problem when you restrict it to maximum correlated states.
Isn't your assistance additive?
It's super additive and strictly super additive.
Oh, that's weird.
It's not a monster.
Sorry?
Just the duo and the original form.
Yeah.
Such the best.
It's not strange that the entanglement assistant is super additive, because that's expected, because it's a maximization problem rather than a minimization problem. So you can always find a better rate by taking two copies. That's clear. I showed that it was strictly, I suspect it was probably known, but I showed that it was strictly super additive. Maybe you know if it was known before.
I just forget, but it's just funny that the duo and the original problem have such different features in the answer. So.
Yeah, sometimes that was kind of what motivated me a little bit, one of the motivations to look at these sorts of things. Because almost every quantity here is additive, except I mean, every quantity here is additive, except, well, no, that's not true at all, but these quantities are all additive, this is additive, this is super additive, strictly super additive, and these ones are the only ones that we don't know whether they're, you know, sub additive. Okay, one more thing is that, I mentioned I'm kind of interested in, well, it's related to kind of questions of bounding entanglement and NPT bounding entanglement and sets of states that are PPT, but I'm interested in the fact that when the squash may, it's potentially possible that the squash could be zero, but the entanglement cost could be, it could still be entangled. In other words, this may or may not really be a measure. We don't know if it's zero on, it might be zero on entangled states. That's a possibility. And I'm interested in that. And so what you can also consider in this case is, in addition to the actual rates of how many qubits you need, you can also consider what the how much entanglement you get at the end of the protocol. So you might get entanglement out of it. And that might somehow be related to these sorts of questions. So you can also look at so how much entanglement you get out of the protocol, or what is the most amount of entanglement you can get out of the protocol, given that you say calculate these rates. So you have a whole rate. You now have two quantities, and you can do kind of a trade-off situation, and that might somehow tell you more about these states. And you can calculate this for the best case, for these the best rates. Well, you can calculate it, but you can basically say that it's equal to, it turns out to be equal to the conditional entropy A given C minus the rate Q. And you can, of course, now optimize it again, a second optimization over C. So you can do a second optimization. If you're better interested in the most entanglement you can get. So that appears to maybe tell you potentially a little bit about kind of the potential for these sorts of states. Okay. All right, other results? Those are most of the results. I should just say that I'm also kind of interested in just generally this neat relationship between states and these quantities. You just tell me the set of states and I find these quantities. So I was interested in kind of what are the rules, on, you know, what kind of sets will give me, say, entanglement measures? What kind of sets will give me correlation measures? What kind of sets will give me just informational measures? And there's also other questions like if the set of states is separable states or PPT states or whatever kind of states, what quantities will I get. But in terms of just kind of more general results, I found that, so you can show that if S, and this is a really a preliminary, well, this result is not very good. I haven't yet made much progress to answering the question of what kind of sets give me entanglement measures and what kinds don't. But you can at least say the following. If sigma 0 and sigma 1 are elements of S, the set S, then, and if for all purifications, psi 0 of sigma 0 and phi 1 of sigma 1, if I look at all purifications of these two elements of the set S, and if for all purifications, the state if this state is an element of the set S, then the rate Q
of S. So I can call it Q. I can always, right? I want to look at, it's actually Q of S. It's S. Then Q of S is an entanglement measure.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm chasing, that's right. I'm tracing a purification. So I can show this, and I don't know the other way. I don't know if the other way is true or not, or even whether it's not true. I don't know. But the hope would be that maybe you can find a characterization of these different sets when it's a correlation measure, whether it's an entanglement. I mean, it kind of, it's related a bit to the, no, I don't know. I don't know. I know almost nothing, actually. And to be honest, I haven't really spent, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, it's a bit like, it's kind of, it's certainly, yeah, it will be convex. Yeah, that's true. Because just take purifications which are orthogonal.
Where does the superscript C come from? You've got trace of psi.
Where's C, sorry?
Got trace of psi superscript C.
And it's a zero.
It's a zero. So the OC is also two zeros, is it?
Ah, yes.
Right, that makes sense.
Sorry. Okay. I have like 5 minutes to give proofs and open questions. So what I really want you to do is kind of, the core part of the result is basically that you can. So in the case where you have side information, you're basically dealing with a redistribution, something called state redistribution, which was introduced by Igor and John Yard. And basically, you can show that the rate Q for a particular A prime C is equal to I A prime R of B in this case, common B minus. And actually the original proof is about 25 pages to prove that you can do this. I found like a really dead simple way to prove it, which is that you can basically think of it like you do the mother, this is the mother, and this is just entanglement distillation. So you distill, the key is that you don't, what you do basically is you have A prime here and you have C here, so you have this kind of total state like this, and the key is you don't need to send entanglement that's shared between A prime and A. You don't need to send entanglement because it's not correlated with law. So C can just kind of create. You can get it as an ancilla for free in this case because it's part of the set S. So you can just give them. In the mother case, it's because you're allowed entanglement for free. In this case, it's because entanglement is part of the set S. But it's quite cute. You just basically don't send e-bits here, and you just you first do kind of an inverse mother to extract e-bits between A prime and A, and then send the resulting thing onto C, and you get this rate over here, with a 1/2. And this thing is equal to it's equal to 1/2 I A B condition C. Okay, and now if we take the infimum of this thing, so if we now optimize over our splitting of A and C, so we take so our Q upper bar is equal to the infimum over C of kind of splitting of C. So if you look at this quantity now, then you can think of it basically as a channel that so I can and now I can just think of the splitting procedure that I gave between R and A prime C as just essentially a channel which acts on the purification. So I can think of A prime as the environment. So just as a channel, and it's just creating the extension here. Essentially, it's just creating an extension. So this thing, well, you can think of it as in the original squash, it's actually what they actually define it as in terms of channels, infimum over channels. So you can think of it as infimum over channels, A, B, given R, and that's just equal to the squashed entanglement. Equal to the squashed. Sorry, lambda is channels. So I take an infimum over all channels on the purification, and that's equal to the squashed entanglement. Is that? Okay. I'm out of time in terms of proving these other results, but they're not actually that difficult. They're quite simple to prove. You have to know some things about maximally correlated states and things like that, but it's not very difficult. And this follows, well, from convexity of entanglement measures and things like that. And this follows from the mother protocol, essentially. So the mother protocol is like a coherent merging. You can think of it like it's like you want to merge where you're allowed to use classical communication, but instead you replace the classical communication with qubits, or with sending qubits. Since I have time, maybe I'll just mention the open problems, and people can ask me about the proofs in a bit more detail if that's of interest to anybody. So I think I'm just kind of interested I'm interested in just the set S. So when does it give entanglement measures, when correlation measures? Can we kind of characterize it in some way? Also, just kind of when S is equal to say the set of PBT states, the set of separable states. I suspect some of them are interesting quantities, just because it seems that whatever state you kind of try and look at, it seems to be a bit interesting, and you get some known quantity. Additivity questions, I think I don't know whether this reclassification of additivity, the additivity questions, whether it's helpful at all. Well, this also leads to, it's kind of, you can think of this as a kind of monogamy of entanglement result. And the reason is basically that if Alice is very entangled with Bob, there'll be no side information, right? That's a way to think about it. If Alice is like pure entangled Bob, there's no side information at all. But if she's not, then there's some side information that will be correlated with her state. And so it makes it easier for her to send it. So you can think of it as a kind of monogamy principle. So there might be interesting monogamy relations, which seem to appear in cryptography, are quite useful in cryptography, et cetera, et cetera. Correlation measures. I just looked at kind of just sending of qubits as my operation, but one can consider other kinds of operations. I could allow classical communication. Things become a bit boring, but I could. But I could look at other things. I could also, for example, look at the classical analog of this. And it turns out, for example, the intrinsic information, which is a well-known quantity in cryptography, looks a lot like the squashed entanglement. It's what motivated and inspired the squashed entanglement. And so it's possible that the intrinsic information has a kind of an operational meaning, which is very similar. I've been able to see that in some cases it does, but I don't know that it does in all cases. So let me just quickly say some kind of bizarre things that are, well, things that kind of I find funny. So usually when you think of entanglement, we kind of had two paradigms before, right? There's like the Bell inequality thing where you basically say entanglement is a kind of correlation which is not simulatable by a local hidden variable model. So that's what we mean by entanglement. You can have kind of the class of operations and monotones, which is the kind of the more recent paradigm for entanglement. So these are different paradigms. Class of operations and monotones. So we basically say we don't know what entanglement is. We have no clue, but we do know that it cannot increase under local operations in classical communication. And you can also think about a class of operation like separable operators and PBQ preserving operators. What's funny about this paradigm is that the notion, both of these really depend on kind of a notion of classicality in some sense. Like, I need to say that there's a notion of classical communication versus quantum communication here. I need to say what classical is in, say, when I'm talking about LOCC. Here, there's no notion of what classical is at all. I mean, it's just a purely quantum problem, and yet classical correlations somehow seem to appear. I haven't said anything about what classical communication is in this model. So it's kind of puzzling that you get entanglement appearing here when you haven't talked about a difference between classical communication and quantum communication. And I'll maybe just end with that. Thanks.
So we have time for an additional question. Maybe we used up all our questions very well. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
You mentioned something before that you don't even know whether the squashed entanglement is, in this sense, of an entanglement monotone.
In which, no, it is an LOCC. So Matthias and Andreas, Christendel and Andreas Winter showed that it was a monotone under LOCC.
Okay.
So it is an entanglement.
But it might be zero in some entangled states?
It may be zero in entangled states.
Okay.
Just like distillable entanglement is also zero on bounded entangled states. So people were kind of excited about it because maybe it can tell us something about bounded entangled states, because if it was positive, if it was positive.
There is currently no known example of a bound squashed entangled state. Right? One which is...
Well, if you found a state where the squashed entanglement was zero, and the but it still was entangled, that would be a bounded entangled state. And it says nothing about PPT. There's nothing about PPT in there, so it could potentially be an MPT bound entangled state as well. So it's quite an interesting thing to be able. That was another part of the motivation of kind of introducing this entanglement notion as well, so that when this thing is zero, for example, we're using it in the case when the squashed entanglement is zero. So when the squashed entanglement is zero, you're still gaining some entanglement, which might give you some hint as to which states might still have a positive entanglement cost. And another reason why you're kind of interested in squashed entanglement, it's just commonly regarded that there are maybe four interesting I think the four most interesting entanglement measures are kind of the operational ones, which are entanglement cost, distillable entanglement, and relative entropy distance.
And this was entanglement we've always regarded as the other interesting entanglement measure, but no one had an operational meaning for it. And kind of you get one here. So it kind of means that your four kind of interesting entanglement measures now all have operational meanings in some sense. So
if I did have an entangled state that had zero squashed entanglement, then that would mean that the correlation between Alice and Bob, which would be non-classical in the sense that it wouldn't be separable,
right,
could nonetheless be transferred to Charlie with right, asymptotically zero communication cost just right, by giving a purification.
Right, device. Right.
Sounds very weird.
Well, we know that we have bound entangled states that can do weird things like being cryptographically really secure. So, well, quantum mechanics is weird. I'm sorry. You can't use that as an argument. Yeah, I agree with you. And that was, again, where I was trying to go with it, that it would be kind of weird. But if you could explain how it could happen, then that might give you some hint as to what these states look like. And it would be kind of a strange resource where you have these states which you can send for free, even though you somehow be able to send correlations for free. It's very strange.
So this would sort of tell you that bound entanglement is very non-obvious, because obviously if just putting R over to Charlie would transfer it, then R must have had exactly what B had to start
yeah,
with.
Yeah, and that makes it sound very strange. So maybe there's some way, I mean, what would be really nice is to prove that this is, I mean, it's actually a bit, you know, thinking about it now, it's actually a bit interesting that that this happens to be equal to this, and then maybe this is not equal to this, so yeah. It's not, they can be equal, but they may be equal in the case when there's zero. So this again is some hint that because these are equal, that maybe when this is zero, this also has to be zero. As you said, that this, it would be very strange. Yeah, that's a good point.
So the condition in the theorem there, the zeros and the ones that you add are have to do with the Mika Roditsky's characterization of monotones.
Well, it's flags. Actually good. Well, it's probably Giffrey's, but it's flat. Would be the name for it. But it's convexity. It's essentially convexity of the entanglement measure. Oh, sorry, it's not flags. You need to prove flags and the convexity. So this is the flags is trivial, it follows automatically, and this is convexity.
Okay, if there are no other questions, let's thank John.